On this edition of the Scott Radley Podcast, we are talking about the election, about all kinds of facets and twists and elements of the election. We're also going to be talking about the outdoor hockey and the Leafs and Sabres that was formally announced now for Tim Hortons Field this coming March. And television. Television is changing. We're going to explain how that is and why that is. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
It is T-minus Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. T-minus like 4 days, 4.5 days until election time. And boy, you know, the elections, even if we don't want them, which I think a lot of people say they didn't want this one, they're never boring. There's always stuff that happens. And I want to bring in Stephen Ledru, former president of the Liberal Party of Canada, now a political commentator, host of the 3-Minute Debate. You can find it on YouTube. Stephen, how are you this evening?
I am very, very well. I'm actually, I didn't know that. If I just mentioned Radley, I'd get 25% off on stuff.
Try it anywhere. Anywhere you can try it. And right. Now, you won't get it anywhere, but you can try it anywhere.
I'm just thrilled.
Stephen, we got a lot of stuff that I want to ask about in the next few minutes, what's going on in the election. And I want to start with this one because we watched the English language debate. I think most people did. If you didn't watch it, you've seen the highlights of it. And one of the moments that led to maybe the biggest explosion was the question about Bill 21 in Quebec and discriminatory laws. And Yves Francois Blanchet lost his mind a little bit, and Quebec apparently has lost its mind. Well, now, according to the Globe and Mail, both Singh, O'Toole, and Trudeau have all demanded an apology to Quebec for this. Is that really the right move? Because even though Quebec, and I know Quebec has a lot of votes and they want to win Quebec, even though Quebec may be really upset, there's a lot of other people around the country going, it is discriminatory. Why are we apologizing?
And it just shows how low people will go to get votes. I just think it's ridiculous that all three of them in unison are saying there should be an apology. But you know what? It's the era we live in. Trudeau has apologized over his 6 years as Prime Minister, Scott, as you and your listeners know very well, for many, 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 many things done in history. Nothing that his dad has done or that he has done, but he'll apologize for anything. And so everybody wants to seek an apology. Instead of having an intelligent debate as to that Bill 21 and as to the impact of it, maybe Kim Campbell was right some 30 years ago now. Maybe elections are not good times to talk about serious issues.
Mm. But, you know, okay, so even if we were to go down the path that you've gone down there that says, you know, Trudeau has apologized for a lot in his 6 years, and so maybe, you know, maybe fine, we could have thought that he might. But O'Toole, and now I know that O'Toole just got sort of quasi-endorsed by the premier there, so you don't want to screw everything up right away. But Singh is a visible minority. If anybody in federal politics should be saying, no, this was not a bad question, this was a fair question to ask. The answer, Blanchet was free to give whatever answer he wanted, but the question was not unfair. I'm shocked that Singh is taking this position.
Well, I think you pointed out a very good point there, Scott, in that it just shows how debased our politics is. When a man who admittedly has said for years, I know him, you know him, he said he has been the subject of discrimination in Canada. I'm sure that's the case. There's always idiots out there who are racists. And here he is supporting a discriminatory law. Now, how ridiculous is that? Someone's going to look back in a few years, writing history, and say, scratching their heads and say, how stupid were people? But they obviously think we were very, very stupid because they called the election in the first place.
We haven't had a hard and fast answer yet from the current government about whether they might challenge this law in the Supreme Court. And we haven't had a hard and fast answer from anybody. But does this situation where now they are all seemingly taking the position that this question was unfair and whatever, does this preclude whoever wins? Does this preclude them from doing anything in the Supreme Court and challenging this? Has this taken that completely off the table?
No, I don't think it has, Scott. I think it has taken it off the table until after all the ballots are counted, we find out who's the Prime Minister of Canada. And then it could come up again, unless, as all the pollsters say, and I think they are right, it's just so close, we don't know whether, in fact, we are going to have a solid government or not. If we have a timid, weak minority government, then it will be off the table for quite some time. And people in Quebec who are of quote minorities will not get any relief for a long, long time.
Yeah, see this one. Look, sometimes. And we can debate all day. There are people listening right now, I guarantee you, who say it's not discriminatory. And okay, that's fine. We can have that debate. I mean, a lot of people think it is. It sure sounds it to me. But, you know, again, I mean, everyone has their own opinion on this one. But I just, you know, you've talked about it sort of where politics is. Where is the unwavering, stiff-backed politician, man or woman? Doesn't it be a guy? Where's anybody who is saying, no, this is just not what Canada is about? And look, if this was happening in Alberta with people who were doing something to say that some minority group couldn't have something, I'm reasonably positive nobody would be being as squishy about this.
I think what you're pointing to, Scott, is that what most people, you know, when they examine the election and all the promises and the campaigning and everybody trying to buy everybody else with their own grandchildren's money, we are in a very low time in politics. You know, there's no one standing up. There's no nation builder. There's no one standing up on principle, as you just advocated. It'd be nice if someone stood up and said, you know, this is discriminatory, and I'm willing to put my career, my word on the line for it. Or it's not, and let's argue about it. It's a time when we don't have leadership. It's a time when it's very difficult to get a position out of politicians. And a lot of that is just because we have had Canada hasn't beaten up. We've been beaten up by a bad government for 6 years, sorry. We've been beaten up by COVID. We've been beaten up now, we're hearing, by inflation and high prices. People are just sick. And they just want to get on with their lives, get this election past them. Hopefully, well, in my view, I think, well, as you have heard, I think we've had terrible government for the last six years. And I'm not saying that if the Conservatives want to be any better, but I think we should at least give them a try, because they haven't been in power and they haven't screwed it up for 6 years.
Well, let me ask you this. One of the possibilities certainly is that Erin O'Toole wins a minority government. That could happen. Could Erin O'Toole, though, win a minority government and not get to govern?
Yes. Well, first of all, I agree with everything you just said, but I'll go further. I think that Erin O'Toole could win a majority government. I think that the Liberals could win a big minority. I doubt the majority. I think there's a lot of people out there who are being polite when they get a call from the pollsters. I think the pollsters are pretty accurate, but you know, anything could happen. We saw that in New Brunswick. We've seen that in other elections where just boom, overnight people just say, they make their minds up, okay, I'm fed up with this and I'm going to give the other guy a chance or whatever. And I think it's going to take days before we know, because of the huge write-in ballot, which doesn't get started to be counted until late on Monday night. There are enough writings which are razor thin that ballot, all those votes could make a big difference. I think it will be days before we know who got the most number of seats. But directly to your question, Scott, O'Toole could get more seats than Trudeau, and therefore most people say, well, you know what, he's the winner. But no, constitutionally, and this is a bit boring, but it's the truth, Parliament decides who is the Prime Minister. And the Prime Minister is Trudeau until he is clearly out. And if he had a good number of seats, fewer than O'Toole, he would have the constitutional authority to go to all those marginal people. Here, go to the NDP. Here, go to the Bloc and say, okay, how much do you want? He wouldn't say it in those terms, but what would it take for you to support my government? Would you like to have more money for your ridings in Quebec? Would you like more money for your supporters somewhere else, NDP? Would you like this or that? Because I am here with a great credit rating still in Canada, and I'll get that for you in exchange for your votes. So Trudeau could still be prime minister for many, many months, if not years, based on the deal he could make. And we see that around the world. Israel, after the last election, didn't have a winner for months and months and months and months and months while everybody sat in rooms and tried to be able to buy their votes. It's terrible.
Well, what would be the moral authority? And I mean, moral, I don't mean in a morality sense. Yeah, people know what I mean. But yeah, if you were Justin Trudeau and you finished.
Wait a second.
Because,
Scott,
and the reason I ask it this way. Go ahead.
Justin Trudeau in the same breath. Come on now.
But the reason I ask about Trudeau is because O'Toole's going to have a much harder time finding a like-minded, philosophically appealing dance partner in Commons than Trudeau would with the NDP. They seem like they would be the logical two that could line up, and the Liberals could offer some of the NDP platforms or programs that they want. And it seems much more likely if it was a O'Toole minority that this situation comes into play. But if that were to happen, would Canadians say, okay, fine? Because that's kind of like a first past the post scenario then, or would they say, no, that's wrong. That's not how we do things here.
I don't think that there'd be any majority opinion on that. We are getting closer to a presidential system where Canadians say the leader of the party who gets the most votes or the most seats should be the prime minister. But in the last election, Andrew Scheer got more votes than Trudeau. He didn't get more seats, but he got more votes. And no one is saying he should be prime minister. So it comes down to the most seats. And people like, you know, Canadians look at it and say, okay, well, if you know, O'Toole has more seats than Trudeau, I think most people would say, well, you know, he should deserve a shot at it. It seems to make more sense. It seems to be have a basis in a common understanding. But it's very, very...
I don't even know how he would...
I mean, we had Mackenzie King, ancient history, almost a century ago, had far fewer seats than Arthur Meehan, and he stayed prime minister for months and months and months.
I just don't know how, even if Aaron O'Toole wins a minority, and even if they declare him prime minister, I don't know how he governs, because I don't see much on the Tory slate being voted for by the NDP and the Liberals. I just don't see much going through. So he may be there in name and in spirit. I don't see how much is going to get done.
But he wouldn't be prime minister though, Scott. We have to know that. If he got more seats than Trudeau, the governor general is under no obligation to call him to make a government. Trudeau would go to the governor general and say, I've got fewer seats than the Conservatives, but I've got all these other seats in my back pocket that I just bought from the NDP and from the Bloc. And I've got more seats, and the governor general would be constitutionally bound to ask him to form a government. The only way that O'Toole could be prime minister would be if Trudeau was defeated in the House after that on a vote of confidence.
And then, we only have a few seconds left, yeah, Stephen, so I want to ask you one more thing before we go, and I wish we had a lot more time. If the Tories don't win this, if the Conservatives, if it's a Liberal minority, Liberal majority, whatever happens, but if O'Toole doesn't win, are the knives going to be out for him like they were for Scheer, or are the knives going to be out for Bernier for stealing away a bunch of the votes that would have pushed him over the top?
Definitely for Bernier, because there will be a number of seats that O'Toole could have won, but for Bernier, I think. But I think the Tories have to stop the knife game. O'Toole has run a very, very good campaign. They've done better than most Tories thought they'd ever do. He'd be very foolish to try to get rid of Trudeau. Sorry, of O'Toole. Trudeau, on the other hand, it's his party. It's not the Liberal Party that I was president of years ago. It is all Justin's party, and the party will do whatever he wants. So it's going to be a messy, messy time for Canadians. We are in a country that is terrifically and disastrously, I think, polarized because of the politics. And I blame Trudeau for a lot of that. He is a polarizing prime minister, and we need to heal as a country. And I hope that after all the votes are counted, days after Monday night, that we can come up with a government that is going to be reasonable, that's going to have the support of a number of Canadians, and we can move forward, because what we've been doing in the last few years is moving backwards. And I hate to see Canadians at each other's throats. I know you do too. And it's just, it's not a way to build a country or a society, Scott.
Stephen LeDrew, always appreciate the time. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the election. I'm sure you'll be. I know you're going to be watching. I mean, if Stephen LeDrew was not watching an election, it must have only meant he'd been concussed and was wandering aimlessly. So really appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
Always a pleasure.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
That good old hockey game this March coming up is going to be in Hamilton at Tim Hortons Field between the Leafs and the Sabres. You had heard rumblings about this, I know, but the outdoor game was made official today by the NHL. Someone posted on social media about this, and I grant you, I mean, it's on ice. It's a cold game, so this is a cold comment, but interesting facts on this matchup between the Leafs and the Sabres. 100% of the teams involved have not won a Stanley Cup in 50 years. 100% of the teams involved have not won a playoff series since 2007. 100% of the teams involved tanked to draft a generational talent and still can't win. 50% of the teams involved have lost to a Zamboni driver. I had to steal that line. Steve Milton is with us from the Hamilton Spectator, covered a few hockey games in his day. Steve, even with all those hilarious little jabs at these two teams, I can't imagine that there's not an awful lot of people around here who are pretty darn excited about this.
Oh, for sure. And I'm going to give that, going back to that social media comment, I'm going to give it my ultimate, and it would be your ultimate praise too, from a writer. I wish I'd written that.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's pretty witty. You know, the thing about this game is it's funny because we're going to get to the excitement because, look, I do think that people are going to be excited about this, and I think there's going to be a huge demand. The one great irony of this game to me, at least of the matchup, is that at least in our minds, at least we believe there are two teams in the NHL that have gotten in the way of Hamilton getting an NHL team, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Buffalo Sabres. And here we are saying, hey, guys, come on into our backyard and remind us of why we don't have a team here.
Well, I think technically that's true, and we know for a fact that it was true up until they changed the regulations in the early 90s. There was evidence of that during the Ball-Silly bankruptcy case in Phoenix, and the Canadian Competition Committee had said, no, we've checked it out, and it better not be that way anymore, and it isn't. But it definitely was the case technically, and even during the 90s, Scott, when they were applying to get a team here, they didn't. Other people in the United States did that blocking work for them, because if you were in a budding market, you didn't want a Hamilton coming into your town. And Don Cherry, actually, to his credit, recognized that, say people in LA didn't know what a Hamilton was or anything like that. But you're right. And I think that is the irony of all of this. There are, I think, probably a lot of ironies that social media comment certainly points out. It's a heritage classic, and yet this is the first time it'll involve an American team, I believe, in any of the heritage classics before that. Not that any of us can recognize the difference between the Winter Classic, the Heritage Classic, and whatever the third one's called. I don't know. Can you?
I have no idea. The one thing I will say, though, with a fair degree of certainty is when the tickets go on sale, and I haven't seen yet what day they go on sale. I don't know if that's been announced yet. I will say 20 minutes, maybe, at most, and they will be sold out. There will be no problem getting people to buy these tickets.
Absolutely, no doubt. Oh, absolutely. Now, there's a number of things that will come into play here. One will be cross-border travel. Remember, this is a Buffalo home game. So when you and I first talked about this, I think it was that first came out back at the end of June or the end of July, and then I checked around people in the NHL, and what they said, what's the NHL? And so naturally, rights of first tickets would go to Buffalo Sabres season ticket holders. Well, I mean, how many of those are there?
They all live in Ontario.
Should be. Well, there is actually more than they should be, because a lot of the ways that people finance their tickets is they buy season tickets, and then they sell tickets to the Canadians, Rangers, Leafs, and who else? And that's how they finance the season ticket. So there's probably more than a team that's missed the playoffs for, is it what, 40 years now, deserves to get. So will they be able to, will those first, let's say that's 10,000 people, would those 10,000 people be able to get across the border? As you say, a big chunk of them, close to a third of that would be from here. But yes, they'll sell out, because obviously I think they can probably fit in somewhere, depending on whether they keep up the stands from the Grey Cup, if there is a Grey Cup, the temporary stands, which they will do, for the extra 2 months, they'll keep those stands. And so what would the capacity be? Around 30. So let's suppose that, you know, like there's going to be 20,000 seats available. Yeah, people will grab them. And they'll go to people who don't normally. Well, then the Leafs will probably get second choice on that too, right? So there'll be two windows. One window for the Sabres. I'm only guessing at this, but this is the way it generally works with these kind of events. It'd be one for the Sabres people. Then the next window would be, the Leafs will. Then it would be open for the general public. When you get to that point, which is what I think you're referring to, then will it take 20 minutes? I don't know if it will.
It you might mean take
less than that, but so
yeah. And the one question, and look, I've raised this before, and I halfway expect this because this happens, you know, is they'll put the things out and everyone will be excited. They'll put the tickets out until people see what the ticket prices are, because these won't be cheap. And people will go, they're gouging us. Well, okay, then don't go. Don't buy a ticket. But I mean, I don't think these are going to be cheap tickets.
No, and I know that in your career, and rightly so, you've spent a lot of time talking about price points on events, particularly, and I think it's a very valid thing to talk about. But price points, particularly when you're dealing with a group, Buffalo might make a mistake. If it were the Leafs, they would not, because they know the market a little better. But they'll be getting advice from the Leafs. Believe you me, they'll be getting advice from the Leafs. And okay, give us the idea of a price point, because we don't want to get this wrong, and we don't want Radley to be right. So let's get
it happens so seldom. You don't want to be one of those times.
So they'll advise them on the price point. It'll be delicately set, because you've got to take driving distance into account, all of those kinds of things. It's also the first weekend of school break, right? So that's actually probably a pretty good thing for people to, you know, maybe give, you know, people a chance. Not that it matters, because it's an afternoon game. It's not like it's a night game anyways, but the traveling would be facilitated. In other words, people from far away is London, probably Peterborough, and Barrie could come. So you're talking an awful lot of people who could never get a chance to see the Maple Leafs.
Unfortunately, By that time, you will have had the Grey Cup. And I don't think you want the Grey Cup to be a practice run for too much, but the Grey Cup will be a practice run to deal with that number of people and people coming from out of town and cars and parking and all that stuff to figure it out.
Yeah, that's it. And one of the big things, is the GO train, right? It's a different operation now than it's ever been before, particularly now, you know, they'll have a facility to up the, because they're already going to be doing it during the week, but on the weekend they'll be able to, and they'll encourage that and have longer trains and all of those kinds of things. And that's, you know, I'm sure they'll do something there where they have, you know, special buses that you can take from the GO train to limit the parking, because we don't get 30,000 people at the stadium anymore, right? I mean, the limit's 24 basically for football. That's the biggest crowd you can get. I mean, I guess for concerts we do, but we haven't had that many concerts at that stadium. It's going
to
be,
and a lot of the people who would come to that would walk or bicycle. So this is a big crowd for people from out of the area who can't bicycle to the park. You've got to get there somehow.
That's right. You've got to get there, and they'll find it very interesting about the parking.
Those people who sell spots in their front lawn are going to be able to retire after this in the Grey Cup.
What if you have snowbanks? I mean, I don't think you will. I mean, generally we don't on March 13th, but what if you have snowbanks? You know, like, I mean, there's about 1,000 parking spots right there. You can't get over the banks.
No, Steve, if you have a snowbank,
schools in the area. Sorry.
If you have a snowbank, you sneak out in the middle of the night and shovel it all onto your neighbor's driveway and front lawn, so yours is clear. That's
sure. It'd be worth it. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, I love, of course, I don't come out of the stadium until about 3 hours after it's over. I kind of like the chaos around the stadium on game day. You know, it's kind of
sure.
Neighborhood chaos,
the buzz.
Right? I mean, it's
the buzz.
Great, and it's fantastic. You know,
we got to run. But one thing I would love to see, and I don't know how you do it, but Rick Jenneret, and anyone who's ever listened to radio or listened to hockey, Rick Jenneret is the legendary, one of the greats who covers the Sabres, does the Sabres games. It's his last year, and he's only saying he's doing 20 games. I really hope. I think he lives on the Ontario side of the border.
Oh, he does. Rick's a longtime friend. His son teaches at, I think, at Niagara, teaches radio broadcast right there. So,
I hope they figure a way to not just have Rick do the game, but to somehow incorporate that into something, because that he is, you know, a lot of people will not have heard him a lot before around here because they listen to the Leafs. That would be a great thing for something.
It
for
really
Rick
would. And I think there's a lot of things they can do that way. There's a lot of things that the Buffalo Sabres are smart and with the Leafs help can do. Now, one of the things I guess But it, how about in the release today, Gary Bettman talking about the great fans in the Golden Horseshoe? A lot of people aren't going to, it's going to leave it a very acidic taste in a lot of people's mouth.
This may be the one outdoor game Gary Bettman does not attend. We'll see.
I don't know. You know, it's funny because right during the Phoenix thing, he came to that game in Dundas.
Yeah, well, Dundas, right? So, you know, people in Dundas aren't quite as acerbic and steely as those in downtown Hamilton.
I'd love to see him do it, you know. I don't know. I haven't seen him in a long time. I don't think you haven't seen him in a long time either. It'd be interesting. There's an interesting relationship between this town and Gary Bateman.
We'll talk about that another day because we've got to run, but there, right. That is a good word. Interesting. Steve Milton from the Hamilton Spectator. Really appreciate it.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Reading something the other day, I wanted to get to this because I found this truly fascinating. I mean, I really found this amazing, and it just speaks, I think, to how the world has changed under our feet. Not in that long a period, quite frankly. I was reading this this list online of the most anticipated TV shows for this fall season coming up. I mean, I know Survivor comes back after a year away and it starts next Wednesday. And there's other shows that you go, oh, wow, okay, pretty good. This is the list of the other shows that are the most anticipated. I'm not going to go through all the names. What I'm going to tell you is the channel they're on, the station they're on. See if you catch the pattern here. Hulu, Apple TV Plus, Netflix, Disney Plus, ABC, Apple TV Plus, Netflix, NBC, Apple TV Plus, HBO, Netflix, HBO, HBO, Netflix, Apple TV Plus, Showtime, Apple TV Plus. If we can go on and on and on. You catch it? There's almost none of these that are on broadcast television. All of the big, new, exciting shows are all on streaming services now. Let me bring in Bill Briou. He is a great TV writer. He's done this for a long, long time. Bill, I don't know how long you've been at this, but I think you've probably covered every new TV series since probably the Ed Sullivan Show or something like that. Maybe not that far back.
When I started, Scott, it was me and Lucy and Jackie Gleason and a bottle of scotch. That's all there was.
That was a great preseason tour down in Hollywood when it was Lucy and Jackie Gleason and that bottle of scotch. That would have been a day.
It was so long ago that we had black and white radios.
That's a good line. I'll have to make sure I credit you with that one. Look, I saw this list and I know that we've been seeing lots of money go into the streaming services and everything else and them investing in shows. But this just to me, Bill, screams, if we didn't know it already, I guess, broadcast TV has lost the war. That's my take.
Yeah, like these big companies, media companies in Canada and the U.S. now, Rogers, Bell, and Corus, and their investments extend to phones and satellites, and, you know, their businesses have changed. And used to be, you know, the prime business was that network television, the broadcast network, and it's just another one of their products, kind of, you know, like there's other things, and they're also, you know, Corus, Canadians and the United States, Disney, which owns ABC. Well, all their focus is really on Disney Plus now, making that their big business plan. So same with NBC has Peacock and CBS has Paramount. And that's where all the energy and money and attention is. And that's where all the creative people are because they're bringing their ideas there because they don't have to worry about commercials every 7 minutes. They don't have to worry about standards and practices. They can just make independent films, really. They can let their imaginations run wild. And right now, this is where they're bringing their ideas.
Once upon a time, I remember, you know, the big excitement with the cable channels was that you could say naughty words and maybe occasionally show something that you couldn't show on broadcast TV. Is that still a thing or have we moved way past that and it's more about the, as you say, no commercials and just do whatever time you want? Or is there still a titillation factor, and I don't just mean in a sexual way, that freedom gives people that they want to do?
Yeah, it's just literally a blank page. The rules are different. And, if you're creating a series for a broadcaster now, The thinking, I think, is that you're playing to, not just homes that basically don't have all these other new bells and whistles. So you end up with a lot of tired ideas, and a lot of it is reality shows that don't cost as much, or they keep, making carbon copies of the hits that are already there. So, for example, Dick Wolf, who, made Law and Order and created different things, he has 9 hours, or actually 8 hours now, of network TV, an entire night of Law and Order, an entire night of FBI, and the Chicago franchise, those three shows, Fire and PD and Med, they're all by the one guy. And he just, literally, you can start one at 8 o'clock and watch right through to 11, and often the actors on the different shows are jumping back and forth between them. So it's a franchise that is sort of an efficient way to make a lot of content, and that's basically what the networks are doing.
You just pointed to, though, I think one of the huge ironies, and it's a seismic shift in a sense. It was not that long ago, Bill, that people were leaving broadcast TV. You said about the bells and whistles. People have broadcast TV now. It's because they don't have all the bells and whistles. There was a time not long ago you were leaving broadcast TV because you didn't have the money. You didn't want to pay. You were cutting the cord to save money, and you could find cheap stuff on streaming. Now, to get all this stuff, you've got to subscribe to 17 streaming services. If you don't have the money, now you go to the cable.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It's dizzying. I cover television. I cannot keep up. There are 500 new shows a year. It used to be this time of year, Scott, it'd be the fall preview issue of TV Guide. You'd pay an extra quarter. It would be twice as thick, and it would be all the new shows. It would be all, literally this week in September would be the kickoff, and there'd be all these glossy pictures of must-see shows from the 80s, if you remember that far back, some listeners, and it would just be an exciting time. And now there's a new show every day. 365 days a year, there is a new show starting, sometimes three or four. Every Friday, it seems Netflix has five new shows. And it's just that idea of it's all starting in the fall is kind of watered down, although there still are some new shows that are this month.
Can it come back? Like, does network TV have to do what other businesses have done when things seem to be changing and just say, look, we just have to rethink them, but we can't compete with this anymore. So what do we do that's entirely different, or is it over?
I think what the reason for this is that people now have discovered that they can watch what they want, when they want, any time that they want to do that. And they can watch an entire series on a weekend. They can binge everything at once and then look for the next binge. And so I don't see that changing with network television. You're kind of locked into coming back every week, Thursday at 8 o'clock or whatever it is, to see the next episode. Some of the streamers, they go back to that schedule, WandaVision on Disney. There are some shows that made you return every week. There are some that are on now that way, 9 Perfect Strangers, different shows that are on HBO, which also streams here on Crave. It's not going to come back. And the reason for it is people love to just watch. When they sit down, they just dial it up and watch as much as they want on their schedule.
Well, the one area I think that's still hanging in and still working pretty well with TV, we'll call it broadcast TV, if it's really niche. I mean, like so many people that I talk to now tell me they watch HGTV, which, I mean, maybe that's just speaking to my age bracket where now people are interested in those kind of shows. I don't know.
Right.
But so, I mean, you would have never thought that people watching people redesign homes or flip homes would have made people excited, but it's such a niche thing and they've done it well. That one seems to be okay. There's others like it. It seems if you're way too broad, that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah, and even, the streaming services are getting into that arena, not just with, homes, but baking shows, and, you've got now celebrities in a, Selena's learning to cook, and, Paris Hilton, she's going to try and turn on a blender, this is where it's gone to. So So what I think, though, that the networks, their strength still is live. If something happens, you can't find it, you know, you can't see a response to an emergency on Netflix. You have to go back to a broadcaster. And 9/11, we've all been through the last week of the 20th anniversary. That was one where everyone turned back to broadcast news to find out what was going on live. And so the big shows are, the NFL has roared back last week. It is just huge because it's live, and people will sit through the Budweiser ads on a football game. We've all been trained to do it. Don't mind it. And that still seems to work. And either live events, we've seen a dip in award shows, though, on networks. But we've got the Emmys coming up this weekend. And that's the big irony, Scott, is that if you're a broadcaster, why would you show the Emmys? Because it's literally now a three-hour infomercial for Netflix and Disney and Amazon. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
And you know, you mentioned about live. Where this gets really complicated now is Amazon Prime, for example, now has NFL games on. So they're nudging their way into live. But as they're doing this, all I'm thinking is, so when they get to the point when now Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, whatever, now have live streams, have we not just tied the circle together and made them now the broadcast channels, and we're right back where we started from?
Yeah, in many ways, you're right. You know, I mean, I think, as you mentioned, Survivor comes back Wednesday, and I bet it comes back huge. You know, this has been, for 20 years, a top five show in Canada, even a bigger success here than in the States. And it has a very loyal audience, and people will return. But, yeah, someday it'll be on a streaming service, maybe a Survivor channel. You know, and that's just the way it's all moving to.
Well, and Bill, let me tell you, it was, and this is where people get cranky, because we in Canada, I wasn't even going to talk about this, but now that you bring it up, Paramount Plus. So CBS has their app, their streaming service, and they brought it to Canada. And I heard from all kinds of people that, you know, Survivor was on there. And then all of a sudden one morning, Paramount Plus decided to lop off all the stuff that they no longer had deals for in Canada. There was like 12 things left on the app, and people were on Twitter losing their minds about this. So, you know, that's another thing is, you know, if you no longer have a general thing, if you're going somewhere very specific, boy, you better make sure that you give the people what they want in that very specific streaming thing, or they can be gone really, really fast.
Yeah. A friend of mine is a big fan of SEAL Team, which was been on CBS for 4 years and global, I believe. And you're right. What CBS has decided is they're going to show the first four episodes this season on the network, and then it's all over on Paramount Plus. So, yeah, you know, you're angry now if you want to see that show, and now you have to subscribe to another service to see the rest of them. And that's just, you know, that's just business, I guess. They're trying to lure you over to this other thing that they make a lot of money from.
There's one other thing, though, about that just blew me away. When I looked at this whole list of all these creative new shows that people are excited about, and they all, so many of them are on streaming services, and I thought, what are the broadcast networks, or the, again, not just broad, well, yeah, the regular TV people, what are they going to fight back with to win people back? And then I see some of the things, and it's a reboot of Doogie Howser, and a reboot of The Wonder Years, and the original CSI people coming. Now they're calling it CSI Vegas to make it more flashy, but it's the original CSI people.
Right.
And it's like, where is the creativity? That seems to be one of the shortfalls here. Where are the creative ideas rehashing everything? I don't know that that works, at least not for long.
Well, the thinking is that, you know, to cut through the clutter, you need to do it with familiar brands so that everyone's heard of The Wonder Years, or, you know, that there's certain shows that resonate and you don't have to start from scratch to bring people to it. And that's why they're doing that. And I mean, I've seen the pilot for the new Wonder Years. It's an African-American cast. It's still set in 1968, but the family now live in Montgomery, Alabama. Don Cheadle is the narrator. It's got a great cast, and, you know, it's interesting. It's going to, you know, people are going to be curious about it, I think. But that's all it is. It's like, if you come up with a brand new idea, the chances of getting people to watch are really hard now because there's so much choice. But if you can wave a flag at them that they kind of have a whiff of already, maybe they'll come over, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if just taking the Wonder Years and making it an African American family, maybe that works. Maybe that finds an audience. I saw that there was a new Cinderella, and instead of a female character in one place, it was a male character. Now there's the big twist, and it's like, okay, really? Again, is that really going to work to draw me in? I don't know. It seems like some sort of creative new thing that people haven't seen would do better. But before we let you go,
on that note, though, Scott, yeah. One of my favorite quotes about television is that imitation is the sincerest form of television. And Fred Allen said it. It was a radio wit who died, like, you know, in 1958. You know, this is a joke he made 65 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's about TV then. So it's sort of, we're still in that same place that if there's something familiar, people might watch it.
Before I let you go, you probably saw this story, but out of Johns Hopkins School of Public Health in Baltimore, there's been a study done that finds that what your mother told you was true, that watching TV kills your brain cells. They have found that it, in fact, kills your brain to watch too much TV. Do you agree with this study or disagree?
That's blasphemy, Scott. Who told you that? What the? Are you trying to take food out of my mouth? What are you doing? And listen, Scott, while we're on it, that Rolling Stone article, I heard you set this up earlier, the 500 best songs of all time. I've gone through the list now. To me, that's like somebody walked in with all those titles in a box, and they tripped and spilled them all on the floor, and then they just put them back in the box. It really looks like it's been thrown into a blender, because the titles don't, it's so foreign to the list that I grew up with that it really seems odd.
Well, it's coming up next, and I'll say, like, there's a few of them in the top 10 that I would say might be in the top 10, but there's a few, and we'll get to which ones aren't then, but there's a few that have, since the 60s maybe, have been universally accepted that this is one of those songs that changed music, or, and now they're like number 30, number 40. It's like, really, we're trying too hard here, but that's okay. Rolling Stone gets to call their shots, and we will, we'll play along, and we'll see if people agree or disagree. In the meantime, Bill, I will not take food out of your mouth, because people are going to go and read your stuff. TV Feeds My Family. Briux TV, BRIOUX.TV. It's a great website, everything to do with TV. So even if your brain is falling apart, you can fill it with this good stuff on Bill's channel. Bill, I really appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott. Anytime.
The Scott Radley Show, weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.